Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. Today's encore presentations of guest Robert Kopecky's three remarkable NDEs delivers in one show all three experiences, a feat it previously took us 5 years to accomplish.
Robert Kopecky survived a traumatic childhood and traveled extensively as a young man, living a variety of lives as a ski bum, a martial artist, a factory welder, a monumental sculpture fabricator, an underground cartoonist, and finally, as an award-winning illustrator, art director, and animation designer. His journeys from the Mayan underground to remote South Pacific islands, to the capitals of Europe, to the deserts of Arizona, and the canyons of New York City were punctuated by three dramatic, distinctly different near-death experiences. Robert, welcome to NDE Radio.
Thank you very much, Lee. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Robert, if you would, as an introduction, please tell our audience about your first NDE.
Sure. Yeah, I was just thinking it's a pleasure to be anywhere, you know, when you had,
yes.
You've had three of them. My first one was I was in my late 20s and I was working a lot. I was very ambitious then and I didn't really have a spiritual life to speak of. I had taken my wife to the airport and was on my way home. And I had one of those equipment malfunctions that you don't see very much anymore, which will tell you about what year it was. My cassette deck in my car malfunctioned, and it ate my tape, which puts it in the 80s, right, in the mid-80s.
I remember all that well.
Right, and a terrible feeling, you know, when you hear that bloop and you know your tape's been eaten. And I grabbed the cassette and pulled it out, and the long string of tape was caught in the mechanism, and the next thing I knew, the lights went out. It was just bang, just like that. I was on an unfamiliar road, and there was a vehicle that was parked in an odd situation, and I wasn't paying close enough attention, and I glanced off it and ran into a telephone pole. And the very next instant, I found myself at the level of the top of the telephone pole. It was dusk, and I was right next to the street lamp, and I looked down over the scene and saw the car that I had been driving smashed into that telephone pole. And I could see my arm hanging out the window. Yeah, I wasn't sure at first who it was, but it was me. And I was able to look over hedges and trees into yards, and I saw lights, porch lights snapping on and people running out of their houses and saying to call an ambulance and the like. And so I was simply, like many near-death experiencers will report, I was free. I felt very comfortable, very warm. I felt a part of everything. Kind of a holistic intellect kind of took over for me. I didn't feel any real angst or worry. And I watched as an ambulance arrived and loaded me into the back of the car. And I tried to talk to people, but they didn't hear me. They didn't realize I was there. Mm-hmm. And I knew all along that I was not alone. I had the sense of a benevolent presence up to my left side behind me that then, as I recall, basically told me that it was time for me to go, and I was shepherded into what I recall as being a kind of a gray wool cloud, kind of a soft cloud, and ended up in a very pastoral setting, sort of like an outdoor cafe or something like that, a park. Mm-hmm. Having what was essentially an interview of a kind. I can't remember the details of the personage that I was with, only that it was very congenial and easy and important. I had the sense that there were important things being hashed out, that I wasn't supposed to really remember the details of the scene, and I didn't actually regain consciousness, and I woke up in a hospital about 18 hours after the... I woke up briefly at one point in between. They were moving me to a hospital that had a plastic surgery residency, but I came to really about 18 hours after the accident. And that was the nature of the first NDE, where I definitively learned that I am a spiritual entity who's occupying a physical body. That was the main lesson that I got from that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then your second one, which happened quite a bit later, as I recall from the book, was quite different from that.
Yes, yeah, they were all very distinctive, although they were all, you know, familiar formats for near-death experiences. I did not walk through the tunnel into the light. That's one I did not get, unfortunately. But, yeah, they were spread out over about 15 years, the three of them, sort of evenly. And in the next one, I had during the course of my life, had some spiritual bumps and bruises that ended up in me acting out, not behaving very well, and hanging out with all sort of the wrong elements and living life in what I charitably call a riotously inappropriate fashion. And I essentially had peppered with these dark nights of the soul, kind of, right? And that was certainly part and parcel of the way that I was living at that time. I had what I call a toxic reaction to my lifestyle. And I found myself losing consciousness on the floor of my apartment and having the entire room fill in with a bright white cloud, the kind that you might see if you looked out an aircraft window if you were flying at elevation and up in the sun and you went through a white cloud, very bright white cloud. Mm-hmm. And then in the midst of it, a screen opened up. And so it was this near-death experience that you've heard of, where scenes from my life were shown to me. And this was not my greatest hits reel. You know, this was not golden moments. They were these kind of uncomfortable, pivotal moments from my life mm-hmm. that I probably should have learned something from, but apparently hadn't, that I was kind of required to revisit one after another. And each scene, which I don't really remember exactly, I have remembered bits and pieces of some of them over the years, but sometimes I don't really trust my memory to fill in the details of the near-death experiences, so I just kind of relinquish the need to go there and take the larger lessons as the most important part of it. But I re-entered these scenes with my heart. I re-experienced these scenes, and one after another, absorbed kind of the meaning that the overall experience had, which is that each and every moment is an eternal moment of possibly great profundity, you know, of great importance. And so we need to be aware of that in each moment, that the way we behave in the world and the way we behave certainly to one another is rather critical in the scale of our larger life that stretches before and beyond this one, and certainly in the way that we affect other people's lives. That was one of the great, great lessons I learned, was even the smallest aside can have cause and effect in the world. And so I need to be present for each moment of my life, where I also, you know, can find the miraculous nature of everything too.
Right. You know, with so many people dying all the time, every day, it's really mind-boggling how each person can be personally welcomed into the spiritual world, and how our each event of our lives can be so important.
Oh yes, yeah, absolutely. The interesting thing about all of that, I think, is, you know, my job is not, like I mentioned earlier, kind of, my job is really not to report on the architecture of heaven or of what is actually going on. I really don't know exactly what's going on. From my experiences, I did not experience the sort of structural aspects of the afterlife. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I did come away with was this understanding that heaven and hell are where we are all the time. They are dependent on our ability to witness the love arising from everything we look at. So in this life, people are born into this life into what might be considered hell, right? And other people are born into what might be considered heaven. And yet some of the people born into what might be considered hell live a very heavenly life, and vice versa. Some people who are born with all the advantages, you know, live a very hellish life. I don't believe that that's any different in any life that we will live in, that the experience of near-death experiencers being the different experiences of near-death experiencers having such range, I think, is simply more of the same as we find here. So some people will enter into, you know, hellish environments, depending on what they're carrying in their heart, in their soul. And similarly, you know, a lot of people can find heaven right here, you know, the essence of heaven, which is experiencing life with an open heart and being engaged in that field of love that I and other near-death experiencers always witness when we're there, I think, you know.
In your book, you speak of an animating source behind all life. Could life itself be the source, or is that too much like worshiping the creation?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think the thing that really interests me a lot these days are the neuroscientists and their suggestions of there being a God part of the brain and the like. And of course there's a God part of the brain. There's a heartbreak part of the brain. There's a hot and cold part of the brain. You know, there's a part of the brain that does connect us to our spiritual experience, even extra-dimensionally. Mm-hmm. And the aspect of their of consciousness being, as science suggests, consciousness being something that's projected from each individual mind and then kind of agreed upon seems very unlikely to me in terms of what my experiences were. I experienced consciousness as a field, loving consciousness as a field that I was engaged in and was fully engaged in on the other side, so to speak. I touch it here when I meditate and when I'm, you know, really connected spiritually. But if you look at what God might be in the sense of your question, or what this animating source might be, then consciousness certainly seems like a candidate to me. And, you know, I believe that that's consistent with the idea that all life here is an expression of consciousness, that all animals and forms of life are expressions of consciousness in their own way and experiencing that conscious field through their own sensory abilities, just like humans do.
Mm-hmm. So do you think of love as a physical force like gravity?
Yes. Yeah. I do consider it more like a quantum field where we can manifest beauty out of it at any moment, that sort of thing. We can manifest meaning and purpose out of any moment, just like in the quantum field you can manifest matter, apparently. All right. Mm-hmm. I think that love, and specifically a loving consciousness, I think that all of consciousness, this whole expression of life, is grounded in love, is basically a benevolent force, like flowers blooming. I like to think of the flower, the wildflower that grows through the cracks in a parking lot. You know, here it comes. There's nothing stopping it. It's heliocentric. It's reaching for the heavens.
The third NDE was my least favorite, if one must have such things. For most people, I think a single near-death experience is plenty, but I guess it was my karma or the hardness of my head or something that led me to have to experience three. In that case, I had been, I'd been at a Super Bowl party, and I went out, and this will tell you when this was because there were payphones. I walked out into a public square in a small town in Arizona, a college town, and I got on a payphone to call my fiance, and I was assaulted by a skinhead, you know, like a big thug, a large kid who was kind of inebriated, and he started to harass me, and I talked him out of it, and he actually reached in and hung up the payphone while I was talking to my fiance. I talked him out of it, and then he came back after I got back on the phone. He came back, and he was quite violent, and I made a terrible mistake. I planted my back foot, and I punched the guy right on the kisser and knocked him flat. And while the people around me in this in this public space applauded because this guy was kind of awful. I didn't realize that there was a van full of these skinhead guys that had been watching the whole thing. And when I left to go home, they followed me and drove up behind me and hit me in the back of the head with a crowbar or a tire iron, something like that.
Whoa.
And knocked me off of my bicycle headfirst into a curb. And according to the police report, because I was unconscious from that point on, they proceeded to kick and stomp me for the worst part of an hour. And the police apparently didn't do anything about it because some of these guys were off of a military base nearby and they all had similar life experiences. So they identified more with the guys that were kicking me, I think.
Than oh, my God.
And in that near-death experience, unlike the previous two that I'd had that were quite illuminative or quite heavenly-like, this experience was more terrestrial or almost subterranean in a way, almost womb-like, in fact, in a way, which is kind of fitting for the nature of the experience. I was in this space that was dark and warm and comfortable, and I was surrounded by a number of entities. In my previous two, I'd only had sort of one entity with me that I'd never really met directly, but I knew that I was under their care, kind of like a guardian angel. Mm. In this one, I was surrounded by a group of entities, and they were all telling me the same thing, which was that I had gone about things wrong and that I had to go back. Mm-hmm. And I had this sense of something terrible happening out there somewhere, like in the next room. It seemed like terrible violence was going on, and I think that was my remaining perception of what was happening to me physically at the time. And I did not want to leave. I fully intended on staying where I was after three near-death experiences in 15 years and a life of considerable confusion as a result of them, really. I wanted to stay put. I wanted to stay on the other side, so to speak. But they insisted that I needed to go back because I hadn't fulfilled my purpose, which is the third section of the book. This is what I gleaned from that third experience was the purpose of our life. And I felt as though I were picked up by a bunch of hands and pushed through a kind of a membrane that I popped through. And when I opened my eyes, I was laying on my back on this street in this Arizona town with an emergency medical worker over me who said, "He's back." And that was my third of the three. As I said, they spanned over about 15 years, kind of equally spaced. And that was the gift of purpose. And so I had these three kind of, classic motifs for near-death experiences, all completely different from one another, though, which has informed my lessons from them.
Now, this last one, coming through a membrane, almost sounds like being born again in a way. I wonder, did you feel like you were being judged by these people, these entities you met on the other side? Was it a life review as such?
Well, the second near-death experience I had was a definitive life review. I was in the midst of this brilliant white cloud, and I was shown these sort of boxes of time that played back these episodes of my life that I had not been appropriately present for. So it wasn't the greatest hits, you know. The third one, the first two, I did not feel judged whatsoever at all in any way. The third one, you could say that I perhaps experienced a bit more judgment because these angels were telling me that I had been doing things wrong, you know, and that I needed to go back, that there were certain things I needed to fulfill that I had not even approached yet in my life. And so in that regard, I was somewhat judged, but it wasn't a harsh kind of a judgment. You know, there was no shame involved in it at all. And in fact, I don't remember experiencing any of those kind of human emotions or human sensations, to speak of. In fact, I don't really remember having a body per se, but still of being myself, of remembering it like through my own eyes kind of thing as I witnessed it.
Was the implication at all, though, that you, if you stayed, if you demanded to stay, that you would be punished for the life you'd led?
No, it wasn't. I did not have that experience. Like I said, really, no sense of shame, no sense of severe judgment at all. Mm. Just kind of a presentation of a larger wisdom or understanding of the way everything works. I mean, there's in all three of them, I had certain experiences in common. And having had the three different ones and hearing all the stories that I've heard now since the release of How to Survive Life and Death in 2014, I know that there are certain things that all near-death experiencers have in common. And that is that we all have this sense of being enfolded in love, just an intense, pure love. Many of us have, or most of us have, this kind of transcendent sense of connectedness, like I did, this feeling of being part of a larger mind, of being enfolded into a greater consciousness, of not having boundaries. I think that we all get this sense of shared purpose, this kind of lesson taught to us, and that we all have this kind of teachable experience where we receive karmic guidance. Mm-hmm. And I did in each one of those three experiences, I think, the spiritual perspective, spiritual presence, and spiritual purpose. And so that's what I teach about as a result of each one. And by that means, by entering into each of these three aspects of our greater reality, we can approximate the experience of heaven here on earth at any time. So I don't really feel judged ever so much. And lots of times my sort of human boundaries kind of vanish, and I feel very much enfolded into this world. As I did on the other side, as it were.
Right. Well, getting more physics-minded, if you will, you've written that you believe we are like customized collections of energetic quantum data, energetically overlapping one another, engaged in the field of consciousness. And I think that's, on the other side, that seems to be true. Can we operate on that basis in this world, do you suppose?
Yeah, well, we are operating on that basis in this world. We just have a misperception problem here because of the form we're in. Being a human being, I think, is a very demanding form. You know, we're constrained to the way we work as far as our experience goes spiritually. If you think about it, it's clear that we are part of, you know, based on near-death experiences and other such examinations of the quote-unquote paranormal, it's clear that we're part of a much larger kind of spiritual technology going on here. And when I get into the physics aspect of it, that's what I'm talking about. Like I said, I didn't experience myself physically. I experienced myself energetically. The lessons I was giving were of a powerfully karmic nature. So I see us as being these packages of karmic information, packages of karmic data. And we're all channeling divine consciousness. We're all connected into this matrix of a loving intelligence, so to speak, that is the eternal. And everything comes out of consciousness. Every consciousness is flowing through us and expressing itself all the time through the unique packages of our experience, through these human packages in this form. Now, when I didn't have this form anymore, I was still myself. And so I perceived myself as being these karmic energies that then my afterlife experiences reflected to me. Near-death experiences are all custom-made. I know you've heard so many of them. They really are custom-made to each experiencer. And
yes,
me, based on my karma, so to speak, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely believe that. And I've said before that this show would be very boring if everyone's NDE was exactly the same thing.
Right, right.
Many, many NDEers come back, though, seeing life here on Earth as a sort of a matrix illusion. And you see life on Earth as being very, and I do too, as seeing life on Earth as being very important and very worthy of our full participation. Maybe you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, you know, everybody's experienced a little piece of heaven in this life. So you know it's possible. And you know from certain kinds of experiences in your life, those ones you associate with that kind of bliss and stuff, that you would love to be able to hold on to that and to make that the standard for your life, you know, all the time. Now, I like to talk about the fact that when we go about our daily life, and if you're somebody who's on this path of discovery, of spiritual discovery, that you perceive yourself possibly as being a spiritual being, but for the most time, you got to pay the rent, and you got to go to work, and you've got kids to take to soccer practice, and you've got all that human stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so every once in a while, you grab a hold of this experience of bliss when you see your child performing in a school play, or when you get a promotion, or when you have a wonderful moment in nature with your family, that kind of thing. And so being able to expand on that is really difficult to do. It slips away so quickly because the rent is due or your mortgage payment or something, right? And what I like to talk about is turning that equation around completely and experiencing life primarily as a spiritual being who is a passenger in this vehicle. And the material world, then, is presenting itself to you as a result of what you're projecting out into it. We will always have the nature of the human world going on out there, right? The circumstances of today's geopolitical map are the same thing as we would have experienced in ancient Rome, you know? So there's always that kind of good and evil and justice and injustice and stuff going on in the human realm. Our job is to identify with ourselves as the eternal and to kind of transcend then the material difficulties of life in a way that we can reconnect with what we really are. It's kind of a Gnostic idea is what I have, kind of being separated from heaven for a while here, like lightning in a bottle, kind of, and wanting to get back to that. And so this understanding, this perception of life as me being a spiritual being for whom the material is arising in very fortuitous ways of life not happening to you, but life happening for you all the time, I think is the way that I like to express it to people so that they can try to live that in their life.
Right. How do you define real evil, though? I mean, you're like your skinheads that attacked you. I mean, is that the absence of good, an absence of consciousness or understanding, or is there like the Manichaeans believed a duality that puts good against evil and evil against good on an equal footing on this earth?
Yeah, I believe something like that, definitely, that it is a human thing. It's a human experience, because in all three of my near-death experiences, and every one that I've ever heard, at some point in them, the experiencer is completely enfolded in pure love and has this experience of this transcendent, loving unity. Mm. And so when you come back to this world, and you start to experience, a jerk or an aggressive person or war or unfairness, injustice, evil, all of that kind of stuff, it clearly is because of the absence of love. It's because, and this is interesting because I heard Marianne Williamson on a debate the other night talking about this very thing, that if hate is what's being used to manipulate people, what we need for it
to resolve it is love. And
yes.
So to me, that's what evil is the absence of love, or the inability to express love. And so our job here as human beings is to remove the obstacles to love in our lives and in the world as much as possible.
You have three tips for happiness that you mentioned: radical kindness, radical forgiveness, and radical surrender. Could you take a minute and explain those?
Sure. That's from the first book, How to Survive Life and Death. And radical kindness is pretty self-explanatory. If you give it a try, you'll find that unconditional kindness to people, and not joining into gossip or sarcasm or something like that, but really authentically being kind with people, it connects you in a way immediately that you may not have understood about the world, that there's a fabric of kindness alive in the world, and it really will transform your life. Radical kindness, radical forgiveness is really the practice of releasing all the stuff that you don't have to carry around with you. You know, other people are going to express their own karma, and you can take that on to yourself and carry it, but you need not do that. And so from somebody stepping on your toe to somebody firing you at work or something, as best as you can, practice radical forgiveness and just drop it and move on and just unload it from your heart. Radical surrender is the third part of that, and there's a great metaphor that I heard from a Native American story. If you're tired of rowing upstream, turn around. The evidence of our lives is that we are here, we're all right, we're alive, we have love in our lives, we have abundance, we have opportunity. This whole thing is carrying you the way that you need to go, reflecting what you are bringing to it. So consciously create good karma in your life, and the world will just open up and show you where to go next. It's surrender as a strategy, really. It's not a detrimental thing at all.
For more of Robert Kopecky's NDE-inspired wisdom, be sure to look for his books, How to Get to Heaven Without Really Dying, Wisdom from a Near-Death Survivor, and How to Survive Life and Death, A Guide for Happiness in This World and Beyond. Also, check out his blog at robertkopecky.blogspot.com. My thanks to Robert Kopecky, and thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived, ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE Radio site and hit the Past Shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE Radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone, for more NDE Radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.